This Star News Media podcast is presented by North Chase Family Dentistry. Open evenings, Saturdays, and they probably take your insurance. Visit them on the web at northchasefamilydentistry.com. And by Tide Water Heating and Air Conditioning, servicing all major brands with highly trained technicians who are the best the industry has to offer, serving Wilmington and surrounding communities for more than 40 years. Learn more at TidewaterAC.com.
And by Cape Fear Pharmacy, a local independent pharmacy providing healthcare and compounding services customized to meet our patients' needs. Visit CapeFearPharmacy.com today and let us take care of you.
Fate has a real knack for binding two people together forever. Sometimes it can be a joyous union of marriage or partnership. Other times, it may be of unintended circumstance or a single fateful encounter. For Lizzie Turlington and Walter Bingham, it was supposed to be the former. A blissful marriage between two people who saw the world as only those with their disability could. But by the end of their story, it would prove to be the latter. A crime of passion, immortalized in the most peculiar of ways. As we approach another Halloween season in the Cape Fear, the public's interest inevitably turns to cemeteries and graveyards in the hopes of catching a ghostly glimpse at one of the many people who call these places their forever home. But cemeteries shouldn't be looked to for sightings of the dead, but rather remembered as conservators of a once-living history, with plenty of stories still to tell. Stories where fact can be just as fascinating and frightening as fiction. That was certainly the case for Miss Turlington, a young woman whose future was bright in 1886, only to have it suddenly and brutally stolen from her by Walter Bingham, the man she was set to marry. The vicious crime sent shockwaves across the state, first as a massive search and rescue mission on the outskirts of Raleigh, and later as a nationwide manhunt that turned up empty. At the center of it all was the tragic loss of a woman who had become a steward of a community that valued her guidance. You see, Lizzie was a deaf mute, and so was Walter. Nearly a century and a half later, the tragedy of their final encounter has been etched into Wilmington's history in the most unexpected of places. Somewhere that may surprise even you. This is Cape Fear Unearthed, the podcast exploring the persisting legends, historical oddities, and landmark stories of southeastern North Carolina. As always, I'm your host, Hunter Ingram, and I'm a reporter for the Star News here in Wilmington. This week on the show, we're launching the first of two episodes for this year's installment in our series, A Cape Fear Unearthed Halloween. For this episode, we are venturing out to Oakdale Cemetery once again to tell the story of a rather unassuming grave, made significant by the names engraved on it. Lizzie Turlington's story was famous in the days and months that followed her disappearance. But what made it infamous in the decades that came after was how she was memorialized in death. On her gravestone at Oakdale, Lizzie's birth and death dates are engraved as most markers are. But what stands out as wildly unusual is that on one side of her marker, it reads in stunning measure, "Murdered by W.L. Bingham, December 17th, 1886. That's right. Lizzie's own grave marker includes the name of the man who killed her. how these two people ended up forever bound together in stone and in infamy is the story we'll tell today. Why was the promise of Lizzie's life cut short by the cruelty of Walter's heinous act? And why might her family want to tether her to her murderer's name forever? I don't tell you this story at Halloween because Lizzie haunts Oakdale, or because her story is anything but tragic. I'm telling it to you now because I want to show you that it doesn't have to be Halloween to find a good story in a cemetery. As always, I'll share with you this story as it has been passed down through history and told through legend. But as is tradition with our Halloween series, we won't have a guest, just our tale. So sit back and settle in for the latest installment in a Cape Fear Unearthed Halloween, as we dig through history to unearth the story behind the unusual grave of Lizzie Turlington. Lizzie Turlington would have almost certainly been an extra special Christmas gift for her family when she was born on December 10th, 1862. Not only was she a girl in a family full of boys, she came just a few months after Wilmington had been ravaged by death and disease during the yellow fever epidemic of that fall. In fact, Lizzie was probably one of the first bits of good news her family had gotten in months, having possibly been among those families that fled the city at the outset of the disease to protect her very pregnant mother. We don't know much about the life Lizzie lived in Wilmington in her youth, but by the time she reached her 20s, she was a point of pride for her family. It's not known whether Lizzie was born without her ability to hear, or if it's something she lost when she was a child. But regardless, she excelled as a student, and spoke in sign language so fluently that she was teaching it to others at the Raleigh school she attended, known as the Deaf, Dumb, and Blind Institute. And yes, that is unfortunately what it was called. In 1880, at just 17 years old, Lizzie had lapped her peers and took over as superintendent of the cooking school at the Institute. She was beloved by the staff and students, one in particular. Walter Bingham was an occasional student at the Raleigh Institute, who is said to have fallen hard and fast for the intelligent young woman. He was born in 1863. And lost his hearing after catching a severe cold when he was 2. Walter spent much of his life battling one illness after another. When he was a teen, he was severely injured in a train wreck that one medical journal actually attributed to his increasing health problems. One tenacious illness he contracted even left him with scars on his face, of which he was said to be very self-conscious. He began his schooling in New York, but visited the Raleigh Institute at times, where he met Lizzie, who would become the matron of the deaf-mute department by 1886. Although he faced many challenges, Lizzie was still taken by Walter, enough that she agreed to marry him, as long as he would wait until the summer of 1887. You have to remember that at this time, Lizzie would have almost certainly been expected to quit her job upon marriage and solely be a wife to her husband and a mother to any children they had. Before she accepted his proposal, she sought the counsel of her boss, during which she asked when would be the best time to marry Walter, so as not to put the Institute in a bad spot without someone to fill her position. Even in this moment, which should have been one of excitement, Lizzie was thinking about others, which she was often said to do. This conversation with her boss was also one of the first times she expressed at least some casual acknowledgement of her future husband's persistent pursuit of her affection, which was already well known at the Institute. Years earlier, Lizzie had become close to a fellow staff member, Dr. Edward Goodwin, when the two traveled the country touring deaf-mute schools. It is said their continued friendship depressed Walter and even caused a bitter jealousy to grow in him. With this potential romantic rival in the picture, Walter likely felt the woman he so desperately desired could be slipping from his grip. When he left home on Thursday, December 16th, 1886, Walter headed for Raleigh, where he hired a horse and buggy for a day-long trip on Friday and obtained a marriage license, likely in an attempt to expedite the promise Lizzie had made to be his wife. That afternoon, he went to the Institute to hang out, as he was known to do, with former peers. And while there, he reportedly showed an old friend a bow tie and a revolver that he was carrying that day. Later that night, he met with Lizzie in the parlor and was said to have been teased by younger students about his habit for jealousy. They apparently told him that Lizzie had no interest in marrying him and was just stringing him along until she could be with Edward. This is said to have angered Walter and almost certainly got his mind racing about her true intentions, something that wasn't helped by reports that she carried a picture of Edward with her. But the next morning, the betrothed couple went about their planned day, which started with joining the officers of the Institute for breakfast and then some light shopping. Afterward, Lizzie stepped aboard the hired horse-drawn buggy, and the two rode out of town toward Durham. People on the street took notice of them at every stop along their journey, because they used their hands to speak to one another, something that almost certainly drew attention. Sometime during that ride, it is believed that Walter stopped the buggy in a wooded area between Morrisville and Cary, and proposed that they immediately move up their wedding. It would seem as though he couldn't bear another minute not being married to the woman he had dreamed of courting since he first met her. In any other story, that may sound romantic, but knowing Walter's habit for jealousy, it likely rang as alarming for Lizzie. What happened next is up for speculation, but it seems likely that Lizzie didn't respond in the way that Walter hoped she would. When he presented her with the marriage license and the prospect of accelerating their nuptials, had she said no, causing him to fly into a fit of rage? We'll never truly know what happened that afternoon, but one thing that is for certain is that because of what Walter did, Lizzie never made it home alive. The irony of the situation is that initially, her co-workers and even her family thought that her disappearance was because she and Walter had eloped. In fact, on December 18th, 1886, the day after she was murdered, the Raleigh News and Observer ran a notice of the elopement, citing it had caused a sensation at the Institute because there was no reason for the couple to rush to the altar, as they were both of age and neither of their families disapproved. However, there still wasn't much need for alarm, as it was just kind of assumed that they would pop back up in a day or two with big news to share. We now know that at this point, Lizzie had been dead for a day. When the same notice ran in the Wilmington Morning Star on December 21st, she had been dead for 4 days. In time, her family and friends would act on their growing concern for her safety, and search parties would be sent out looking for Lizzie. On December 23rd, her three brothers, along with what was said to have been hundreds of locals, made the drive from Wilmington to Raleigh to aid in the search. But on Christmas Eve, 24 years after she joined the Turlington family, Lizzie's body was found in the woods. She had been positioned with her hands crossed over her chest and her legs straightened out as if she was being prepared for burial. When the search party found a pool of blood near a railroad track hundreds of miles away, it was determined that Walter had killed her elsewhere and then dragged her body to where it had been staged. Her belongings had been tossed in the trees nearby, and her hat and pieces of her clothing were found strewn around the woods. Initial reports said she suffered brutal blows to her face, but those were later determined to be wounds from the buzzards, which had already started to feast on her decomposing body. Almost immediately, her brothers brought her back to Wilmington to be buried in the family plot at Oakdale Cemetery. That ceremony was scheduled for 3 p.m. Christmas Day, with a notice running in that morning's paper. But at the last minute, it was delayed a few days so the coroner could conduct an autopsy, which determined that her cause of death was from a single gunshot wound found behind her left ear. The coroner noted that there was a deep wound to her neck, as if she had been stabbed with a knife. Her right hand was also swollen and scarred, which may have indicated that she fought back in her final moments. As the sensational story spread, accounts of the crime ran with headlines like "Murder Most Foul" and "A Terrible Affair." Wilmington residents grabbed each day's newspaper in the hopes of getting an update on the search for Walter, who had virtually vanished after the murder. The couple had last been seen together, riding through Morrisville around noon on December 17th, again recognized for their use of sign language. Walter was seen again around 2 p.m., though this time he was riding alone. He dropped the horse and buggy off near a train station and inquired about tickets to New Orleans and Atlanta. But he ultimately decided to stick a little closer to home and hopped a train to Greensboro, and later another to Charlotte. Then he disappears for a few days, popping up again on December 23rd at a deaf-mute school he once attended in New York, brandishing his revolver and telling anyone he passed that he was out to kill Dr. Edward Goodwin, the man who he thought was trying to steal his bride-to-be. Thankfully, he never found Goodwin. The next few months of searching turned into years, as only occasional reports of someone possibly resembling Walter making the papers across the country and then the world. And those reports were all over the place, with some saying he was hiding out with friends in Raleigh and Durham, and others saying he was spotted in Arkansas and even Canada. Some people believed his family knew exactly where he was, possibly in Paris or even somewhere in Germany. And many believed that he couldn't bear the guilt of what he had done and committed suicide, with one report saying that he jumped from a suspension bridge into Niagara Falls. Whatever happened to Walter, he was never seen again, despite large rewards offered for any information leading to his arrest. He never faced the charges of murder that hung over his head. Lizzie never got justice, and her murder became one of history's many cold cases, which is what makes her gravestone even that much more strange. It is not known when that granite monument was placed atop Lizzie's grave, though the swift nature of her death and burial would seem to suggest that it took time to make and was installed only after she was laid to rest, and possibly even after it became clear that Walter may never be caught. Is that why her family made the curious choice to engrave his name on her grave marker, under the words "murdered by"? Maybe they wanted to shame their once future son-in-law with an eternal reminder of his deadly deed for all of those who visited Wilmington's historic cemetery to see, one that would never be forgotten or fade with time. But seeing as how Lizzie had her life ripped away by him, it almost seems cruel that she now has to spend forever shackled to him. As I stated at the beginning of this episode, Lizzie Turlington does not haunt Oakdale Cemetery. But in an unfortunate way, Walter Bingham haunts her. A murderer's name carved into history, just inches from his victim. That's it for this episode of A Cape Fear Unearthed Halloween, and our look at the tragic story of Lizzie Turlington. Thank you so much for joining me. As a reminder, you can visit Lizzie's grave any day at Oakdale Cemetery, which is open every day of the week from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. But please be respectful when visiting her grave or any of those at Oakdale Cemetery. Until our next episode, please make sure that you're a member of our Facebook group, where listeners can ask questions about our episodes and share their own memories of the region's history. In that group, I post extra content for each of our episodes and all of my coverage of local history for the Star News. You can find that group by searching Cape Fear Unearthed on Facebook. If you have episode ideas or questions about the show, you can email me directly at capefearunearthed@gmail.com. And don't forget to sign up for the Cape Fear Unearthed newsletter, which goes out every week. Sign up for that newsletter at starnewsonline.com/newsletters. As always, you can get a list of all the books, articles, and resources used in researching this podcast in the show notes of each episode. Cape Fear Unearthed was written, edited, and hosted by me, Hunter Ingram. You can find more of my work at starnewsonline.com or by following me on Twitter, @Hunter_Wesley. Additional editing for the show is done by Adam Fish. This podcast is made possible by listeners and readers like you. Support local journalism and Cape Fear Unearthed by subscribing to the Star News today at starnewsonline.com/subscribe. And while you're subscribing to things, be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're there, leave us a review, which will help more people find Cape Fear Unearthed. Until next time, get out and explore the Cape Fear region on your own. You never know what spooky things you might unearth.